is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the SB Nation family of sites. He is also one of the hosts of the original NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. And we are in episode 334, recording on a Tuesday night here on the holiday week. And my goodness, the Cardinals did it. They are 4-0 in the division. The Cardinals won. They're 9-2. They did Colt McCoy. Yeah, they have their bye week this week. Seth, how do you feel about this team? 9-2, entering the bye week, winning 2 out of 3 with Colt McCoy starting at quarterback. It's fun right now. We haven't had this much fun since 2014, and by this point in the year, we were worried because Carson Palmer had gone down.
Yeah, and you know, you look at it, this team just seems like a legitimate title contender, and that's all you can really ask for when you look at it from that perspective, because you see that they have a defense that is a really, I mean, the definition of bend but don't break, right? And then they have an offense that is able to make plays all over the field with different guys. I mean, you think about the names they're missing, and we know Kyler and Hopkins, but in this game, they were without, obviously, Chase Edmonds. Obviously, Max Williams has been down for a while. And people will say, well, Zach Ertz is better. Well, yeah, Zach Ertz is a better receiving tight end. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. But I don't think it can be understated how good of a blocking tight end he is. And then you're missing Justin Pugh. So when you look at, you know, it overall, and the fact that they – and I know people say, well, you know, if ifs and buts, but they were basically 3 missed kicks away from putting up 30 more points on the road and winning. And they still won by 2 touchdowns. Like, this is just a really good football team. And I think you and I thought that they had a level of being a NFC contender. I'm not going to say Super Bowl favorites, because as long as Tom Brady's breathing, you know, that's just the reality.
It's but true.
Super Bowl favorites. Or Super Bowl contenders, but now you look at it and like they legitimately should be the favorites outside of Tampa, right?
Well, like, and the fact of the matter is they are the most consistent team on both sides of the ball.
I think they're the most complete team,
yes,
as well.
Their offense is elite. Their defense is great. And you know, aside from the hiccups that they're, we look at the 2016 team, they had a top 5, you know, a top 10 defense, top 10 offense, but their special teams was so bad that it undid everything. And when Matt Prater had those kicks missed, but it's just the fact that they're great on offense, they're great on defense, they're being coached very well this year, and there is a level of maturity about this team that we kind of haven't seen from Cardinals teams in the past. It's really refreshing.
Yeah, and there's just the reality that they seem like they are an incredibly balanced team. They seem like a team that doesn't panic. I thought last week, obviously, we saw a little bit that what was his name? Colt McCoy panicked when they got down 14-0, right? And I think nothing says that more than that roll out to his right and then throw back to his left interception. He threw and you're, and everybody's like, all right, well, obviously he's thinking he's Kyler Murray now. And Colt even said it. He's like, hey, you know what?
He's like, I know better. I know better. I shouldn't make that throw.
He's like, I tried to do too much last week. And I, you know, and granted, like, I don't think you get upset when a guy is trying to make a play. But in that sense, you have to understand when he's, you know, he has to understand the situation and his own limitations. And like you said, he didn't do that. And so to see them come back and just continue to play complete football on both sides of the ball, or on all three sides in all three phases of the game, is, it just gives you hope that this isn't a one-off, right? Like, that's the big thing now. And obviously we're going to just enjoy this year. But one of the things, you know, the SB Nation Seattle Seahawks site, Field Goals, you know, did a Q&A with me, and they asked, you know, we were all wrong about, or not everybody, but, you know, the Seahawks fans were all wrong about Cliff Kingsbury. Clearly he's a, you know, legitimate coach. And I said, definitely right now he's a legitimate coach. But I mean, how many teams have we seen go from being the, you know, the Falcons, the, you know, the, who is the other team that just, you know, went to the Super Bowl and now, but yeah, I mean, it turns on a dime quick. So that's the next step. But right now we just get to enjoy it because, I mean, they're winning freaking road conf or divisional games with Colt McCoy at quarterback with no DeAndre Hopkins, with no Chase Edmonds. Like, you, if you and I said over those three games in the season, the 49ers, the Panthers, and the Seahawks going into the bye week, that Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins would miss all three games, we're saying 0-3,
probably. You know?
Yeah. And so to see it where it's not just that they're 2-1, but their two wins were just as impressive as their one loss was disappointing. And I think that to me says the most about this team is that this team is as legit as we've seen in the last, I would say, since, you know, the Super Bowl team. And obviously with the idea that they're legit in the fact that, you know, they have to get there as well, but they're legitimate contenders in the NFC. And that's something that we've been waiting for the last 7 years or 6 years again.
Absolutely. And I've said on this show for a long time, so dating back to the off season, I felt that this team had a Super Bowl ceiling. And everything had to go right. And the fact of the matter is they're living up to that, only not everything's gone right. They lost J.J. Watt. Kyler Murray goes. It was – now they've had some things. They've got some help and some losses. And Seattle's been surprisingly not good this year. But it's just it's fantastic. I'm having fun with the ride.
Well, and real quick, just – and you're right. Seattle's been bad. But that's the first time they've played Seattle.
Yeah.
And – their win over San Francisco looks more and more impressive this last win, I should say.
Yes.
The second win over San Francisco looks more and more impressive each week because of what San Francisco's doing to everybody else.
Like, it's true.
Like, you look at it and you go, okay, they just drill the Bears in Chicago, and okay, that's expected. Like, no big deal. That's not anything.
Then they upset the Rams and then roll the Jaguars. And so they've got three wins in the last four games. They blew, you know, they
scored over 30 points in each game and they held their opponents to a total of 42 points in those three games. And the Cardinals beat them 31-17 with Colt freaking McCoy.
It's so great. Yes. It's great. We're going to talk about the specifics of the show, of the game. We're going to break down the game. How big was it? What was the good in the game? We're going to talk about Colt McCoy as well, because I think in just three short games, he has already cemented himself into, in some ways, legendary backup. I know we don't have a great history of backups in quarterbacks in general, but I think we've already, I think he might have earned himself a kind of a long-term stay, even at his age. Some negatives we'll look at: the misses by Matt Prater, the kicking game concern, the lack of playing time for Zaven Collins, and as the Cardinals do not have a game this week as they're on their bye, we will look ahead to the remaining six games on their schedule. Which games are most important? What do we see happening? Which ones must they win? And kind of how do we expect them to go on down the stretch? So let's go ahead and get started with that. We've talked about the kind of the status of the team right now, but really, I can't understate enough. So how big was this win? Well, I couldn't oversell it last week. If y'all have listened to kind of the things that I kind of pound my fist about, and it is division games. And the Cardinals have been bit in the butt many, many times, even in fairly successful years, because of how they end up playing in the division. They play in a tough division. But I say before the season, if you're going to be considered a wild card team, you have to win three division games. If you're going to have a chance at winning the division, you have to win four division games. And a perfect scenario is where you pick up at least one win against each team. And now the Cardinals have started off in their division, 6-0 on the road, 9-2 overall. But they are now 4-0 in the NFC West, and they have wins against each team, meaning, and the way things stand now, because the Rams have two losses. No one has fewer than two losses other than the Cardinals, which means there will not be a divisional team. No team in the division will be able to, no matter what their overall record is, they can't beat the Cardinals on a head-to-head, and they can't beat them on divisional record. So it'll come down to something else down the line. And the Cardinals have already taken care of business. They've got a win against Seattle. They're 1-0 against the Rams. They're 1 against the Seahawks. And they've swept the 49ers, who now look like a playoff contending team. And I can't overstate just how important that is, that they are in control. They now control things. They control their own fate. And they've done really, really good about doing that this year. And the other part is important is because, and just the level of confidence, literally in three games of Colt McCoy, with no Colt McCoy and no DeAndre Hopkins, they improved their status in the NFC. Kyler Murray got hurt when they lost. Green Bay took over the number one seed. The Cardinals, after three games of backup, are the number one seed. They literally improved their status in the NFC with Colt McCoy at quarterback. And with that, I don't think you can say that it is, you can't overstate this of how big that is, because then you're getting a quarterback back who's playing at an MVP level, and you're setting yourself up to roll through the rest of the season. I'm not going to predict that, but you're putting yourself in a position where now the team not only believes in Kyler, they believe if he's not at 100%, that same, and we'll talk about this a little more, they have just as much belief in Colt McCoy for the team as they do with Kyler Murray. They just, you know, Kyler Murray's more special, but this is a team that believes it can win no matter who is a quarterback this year. And we saw when, you know, Chris Streveler went into the game against the Rams, things just fell apart. And I'm on the record as saying it wouldn't have mattered if it was Brett Hundley. Brett Hundley would have had the same result against that number one defense of the Rams. So, but I think what this does is mean this team believes that no matter who they have on the field, that they are the better team.
Yeah, and that's a big belief to have, and you know, that's important. I think the other thing is that you look at the fact that this team this season, more than, you know, anybody really since 2015, is a team that can change their play and adapt to play teams in different ways. Yeah, they don't stop the run well. That's true. But we've seen them go into a slugout, you know, slog fest with the San Francisco 49ers. We've seen them play a shootout with the Minnesota Vikings. We've seen them win games, obviously, by what is their, you know, MO, which is get ahead and be a great pass rushing team. And so that's the thing, is like, when you can win in different ways, when you, that's going to be what's key, you know, in the playoffs. And that's what we're talking about now. Cause I mean, they're virtually a lock to make the playoffs. I mean, obviously we can't say they're in right now, but it's getting close. I wish I knew what their magic number was, because it's got to be getting close to where they're at least guaranteed a wild card position. You know, but that being said, the other thing is, like you said, you set up where you come back and you take on a bad Bears team. Let's just, you know, put it honestly, and we'll discuss that obviously, but you come back and you play a bad Bears team without their special, you know, talents on the defensive side of the ball. You know, Khalil Mack's done for the year.
And they might have, and it might be Andy Dalton, the quarterback.
Yeah. And then you've got the Los Angeles Rams at home. That probably is going to be a slugfest. And, you know, maybe you can figure out what your problems are at home, right? Like, but then you go to Detroit, and then you get Indy at home on Christmas. And like, you look at it, like you said, you're set up where you're playing home away or away and home each game for the next 6 weeks. And that Dallas game on Sunday could end up being the game that really decides the NFC. I mean, that's, you know, that's week 17 and there's still a week left, but if they take care of business like you expect them to, and they go 3-1, you just look at that coming out of the bye, and they go 3-1 where they're at 12-3 with two games left, that Dallas game could put them at 13-3 and lock up the one seed. And that's what you want more than anything. You want to be able to make a choice if week 18 matters. You know, come out, get your guys a quarter or a half, like we've talked about before. And that's, you want to dictate the rest of the season. And that's what they've put themselves in a position to do. I mean, I think it's amazing to say this. The Cardinals going into the bye and coming out of the bye are the number one seed in the NFC. Like there's not a question.
No matter what happens this weekend, they're still number one, because they have a full game lead on the Packers. They have a game and a half on the Rams. So the Rams win, they're still a game behind. The Packers win, they're still a half game behind the Cardinals. Now, granted, we know the Cardinals have to stay ahead of the Packers because they hold the head-to-head. But hey, the win was big for a number of reasons, and the fact that they got help. And so the Cowboys lost, and the Packers both lost, and they took care of their own business, and that allowed for good things to happen, because the other teams in it didn't take care of business. Anytime you stack wins the way they're doing, 9 wins, you put yourself in a position to where, and now granted, at the end of the season, you do want to be playing playoff-like atmospheres where win and move on, that sort of thing. But it also allows some margin for error, such as, you know, you have a stinker here or there. They had their stinker, and that was against the Panthers. They lost a tough one against the Packers. They got their fannies whooped against the Panthers. And if that's the one that they've had, that puts them in a really good position to not only get the double-digit wins, and this is a team now that looks like, assuming the level of play continues and they get Hopkins and they get Murray back, it's just so big for a number of reasons, because it feels like they can just get on a roll and quietly be the best team in the NFL. Because like a few games ago, so it was before while they were undefeated, we talked about this on the show, how, well, there's no team that's better. And I think we've reached that status again. We had that the Cardinals, whether they're the best team, we can safely say that there isn't a better team. There is no better team than the Cardinals right now. There is no more consistent team than the Cardinals. We thought the Bills might be. The Bills are going through some problems. The Packers have you know, they're not perfect by any means. And then they lost another offensive lineman. They lost Aaron Jones. The Cowboys now have a couple of losses since they were kind of in control of things. And there's some questions about the offense. You've got the Rams definitely have questions, and the Bucks that just had two stinkers in a row before they took care of business against the Giants. And so the playoffs, obviously anything happens, but if you're looking at how things are going right now, the win is important because it really establishes themselves. They are the best team in the NFL right now. That no one is playing better on both sides of the ball.
No, and that's, you know, that's the thing with this is that with the way Colt McCoy, you know, led this team and the opportunity they have to really take that step to becoming the number one seed in the NFC, it gives you that confidence, as you talked about, where it doesn't matter who our quarterback is. Now, obviously, there's a limit to that. We all know, and not to pick on Ryan Lindley, but if you get to Chris Streveler, right? Like,
Chris Streveler, but rather Trace McSorley.
But I mean, if you get to any third quarterback,
of course,
you're starting to feel a worry about your team. But to your point, like the play of Colt, obviously, and then the way that the team as a whole is playing, it gives you this almost, you don't want to say arrogance, but almost this air of
swagger. They've got some swagger. Yeah.
That, you know what, this is a team that's the best in the NFL, and, you know, come into our house, we'll go into your house, it doesn't matter, we'll take on all comers, and we're gonna win. So
maybe we're just better.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Maybe we're just better, according to JJ Watt. Yeah, that's it's fantastic. It's they're the good in the win. So obviously the defense took care of it. They were great on third down. They stayed on schedule offensively. And then just the fact that now McCoy was fortunate on that one overturned interception. It wasn't an interception, but it was a bad throw that should have been picked off. Colt really played mistake-free football. And that's what you want from your backup. And when you do that with the type of playmakers you have, and the type of defense that you have, it really is that. And then, you know, they played offensively the way Seattle and San Francisco like to play offensively, which is just dominate, like stay on the field and take time off the clock, methodically move down the field. They didn't need flashy plays, really. You know, Rondale Moore had 11 catches for 51 yards. They just kept moving the sticks and didn't make mistakes. And we've seen from Cliff Kingsbury this year, we've always questioned how he's like, his game management has gotten so much better at the end of halves, at the end of games. And when Seattle came within 3 points, what did they do? They just moved down the field, scored a touchdown, sealed the game. That's all they did. When it looked like Seattle maybe had kind of gotten on track, but honestly, everything's good right now. James Conner is controlling the ball. You're getting contributions from guys like Antoine Wesley. Zach Ertz is emerging. Chandler Jones appears to be back. Marcus Golden's continuing to look good. They're getting good play at all. Well, Zach Allen is extremely active, which we're finally seeing. He's, and knock on wood, stayed healthy. And so there's so much good that you gotta love with what is happening right now with the Cardinals.
Yeah, and I say the only weakness on this team and right now has been the inability to stop the run. But, you know, I was talking to people about this team, and one of the things that somebody brought up is they're built very similarly to those Peyton Manning Colts teams. When you think about it, they have an abundance of pass rushers and coverage guys. And so, yeah, if a team gets ahead and they're playing from behind, it can be tough. It can be a slog. But for the most part, if they get out in front, it's go time for them.
Oh, goodness. And great.
That's what we've seen this year. You know, we haven't seen another team, when they get up, be able to even mount a comeback at this point.
No, not really. Like once they establish it, they steamroll them, because then the defense, which is very good at forcing turnovers, is doing just that. And they are a team that can come from behind, so they can play in the close games, but also just stomps on the throats of opponents. This is a team that, you know, that 2015 team, they were notorious through the second half of the season. They would build a lead, nearly give it up, and then make plays down the stretch. This year's team so far isn't doing that. They are getting leads and just putting the teams away. Now, they might threaten, but the Cardinals never lose control of the game at all. Like, even, you know, it got within 3 points. That San Francisco game, the 17-10 game, the Cardinals were never not in control. There was threats, but they were always in control. It was everything was on their side. And my goodness, it's just everything, aside from injuries, everything is going well in terms of football play for the Cardinals.
Yeah, all the on-field stuff is going well, and that's what you want to see. You know, it is the abundance of injuries that is the one thing I think that's keeping all of us from just diving into this is the flat out, you know, the Super Bowl favorites. And I think that's part of the reason you're not seeing Vegas and the Sharps and those guys buying in quite yet, because they have dealt with a lot of injury issues. And the uncertainty around Kyler Murray was obviously a big thing with the Vegas lines as is. I mean, you know, we talked about it. They started that week 2.5-point favorites, and by game time, they were 5-point underdogs. And yeah, it's crazy to think that that's a real thing. But, you know, that's when you're talking about an MVP candidate, he's worth 7 points. I mean, he is worth a touchdown. And I mean, let's put in DeAndre, even though we pretty much knew Hop wasn't going to play. This is a, you know, it's a team that, it has one glaring flaw. Everybody knows who it is, and there's only been one team able to exploit it. Because remember, people like to point to the Packers game. The Packers didn't run the ball down the Cardinals' throats. They were the beneficiaries of two Rondale Moore mistakes, yep, leading to, you know, 10 points and the difference in the game.
Absolutely. Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about Colt McCoy and where he's kind of cemented himself in terms of Cardinals lore, in terms of quarterback history. So we'll talk about Colt coming up next in Rise Up C-Red. This year, Turkey Day at MyBookie gives you plenty of reasons to be thankful, starting with a $250 risk-free bet this Thursday, Thanksgiving afternoon, when the Dallas Cowboys host the Las Vegas Raiders. We know y'all will be watching that game, Raiders-Cowboys, Thanksgiving. Cowboys are always on TV. Now you can put some money on the line without the risk. Bet the spread between the Raiders and the Cowboys on MyBookie, and when you win, you win. And if you don't, MyBookie will refund you up to $250. Simply put, you can't lose the bet. And that's what we like to say is no risk and all gravy. So before you get that wager in, set yourself up for success by doubling your first deposit when using the promo code CRED at MyBookie. That's promo code CRED to double your initial deposit all the way up to $1,000. So you don't need to break the wishbone to be the one to come out ahead. Feast risk-free on Turkey Day with MyBookie and make sure to stick around for seconds as they gear up for what should be a fun Black Friday with tons of odds boosts that will have your belly and your pockets full. Bet anything, anywhere, anytime with MyBookie. Again, that's promo code CRED at MyBookie for the initial deposit double, and then bet the spread on the Raiders-Cowboys with a $250 risk-free bet. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web, and we continue to talk about the Cardinals, only we're going to talk about Colt McCoy. Colt McCoy, in my opinion, has reached, in just three short games, Drew Stanton status. And what do I mean by that? 2014. Now, Bruce Arians was a big fan of Drew Stanton when he signed. In fact, he was like the first free agent signing that they made after Bruce Arians was named head coach. And then they made the trade for Carson Palmer. There was some talk that Drew Stanton was going to be the starter. But he didn't play at all 2013. And when Carson Palmer went down, Drew Stanton very quickly endeared himself to Bruce Arians in a way that he had 100% trust in Stanton to be able to do anything that Carson Palmer would do in terms of winning a game. And I think what Colt McCoy has done in three short games, he might have done the exact same thing in the eyes of Cliff Kingsbury, to where we might not see another number two quarterback other than Colt McCoy until he's ready to retire. And I firmly believe that that sort of belief goes a long way, because once Drew won a couple of games in 2014, Bruce Arians was unwavering in his trust in him. Unwavering. So he had no problem in believing. Like, there are a number of us who believed that had Drew Stanton not gotten hurt, that the Cardinals could potentially in 2014 have ridden his arm and shoulder all the way to the Super Bowl with the way that they're playing defensively and offensively. Other than that, and then it, you know, he ended up going down with a knee injury against the Rams, and that ruined everything. But just how big was it? How significant was it for Colt McCoy to not only to have the one game against the 49ers, but then to come back after a struggle to do something he hasn't done in nearly a decade? His last 300-yard performance was in 2014. What do you think that Colt McCoy has done for his career in just these three games?
I think he's, yeah, like you said, earned a spot in Arizona probably for his career, as long as he wants to be here, as long as Cliff Kingsbury is here. You know, you talked about it, like having a guy you trust to come and win games no matter what is a really important thing. And like you said, in 2014, if Drew Stanton stays healthy, the Cardinals felt like they could win a Super Bowl. They were the Philadelphia Eagles before Nick Foles, right? Before the Nick Foles Eagles. Now, maybe they don't win it. Who knows? But, you know, you look at it, that's what you want. You want a guy that you can have, that you have faith in, that you believe in. Obviously, there are different levels of backups in the NFL. And you know, like we said, Colt gives you the chance to win every weekend. And that's something that's really, really difficult to find in the NFL. And it's hard to have somebody that you trust to win every weekend. And, you know, obviously Kyler's the man, and there's nothing more to it. And maybe the difference is you feel like with Kyler Murray, you're the Super Bowl favorite, whereas with Colt, you're a team that can still compete, right, for a Super Bowl absolutely, or NFC championship. So But I mean, he's already, you know, made himself that legendary status of irreplaceable backup. And I know people think that's a silly term, but it's just a reality.
Well, for a number of reasons, because it's hard to, so you have different types. So you've got has been quarterbacks who used to be pretty good. Now, Colt McCoy, early in his career, now it was really unfortunate because he was a star in college. And were it not, like, he, the hype he had, had were it not for that shoulder injury at the end of that season, you know, I think his NFL career would have started differently.
Right. And it happened in the national championship game. Yes. So it wasn't like it happened and then he was able to rehab. Like, it literally happened in the national championship game.
And I think what you're seeing, like, now is partially almost what he could have been. I'm not saying he's, you know, we're talking about the type of levers of quarterbacks. You've got the Kevin Cobbs of the world. You've got all sorts of, he's the guy who could have been, you know, an Andy Dalton type quarterback. Now, Andy Dalton's play declined and then he couldn't elevate players. In a way, Colt even was able to elevate some. So he made smart decisions. He's got some juice to his arm. He's smart.
He probably was a Baker Mayfield.
Yeah,
type of player.
He's Baker Mayfield before Baker Mayfield.
Right. And I know people will think like that's overselling him, but I think people forget how good he was at Texas before the shoulder injury.
Absolutely.
And he became a Chad Pennington level quarterback, right? Like, and Pennington was the same way. Pennington was a guy that was a very good quarterback in the NFL until his arm just basically became to the point where he couldn't throw the ball more than 15 yards down the field. Now, Colt's not that bad yet, obviously, but he's clearly, I mean, we joked about it, but I tweeted about it during the game. Like, there are throws that he makes during the game that make me physically laugh because I'm like, if this dude had never hurt his arm, because he still throws the ball at times like he's like, oh yeah, I can still make that throw. And you're like, dude, you haven't been able to make that throw for 12 years.
He's 35 like, years old. That's right. The crazy thing.
You got hurt 12 years ago. You can't make that throw. But yeah, I get it. Like, it's hard. It's hard to remember that. And it's hard to overcome that. So, but yeah, he is just the ideal backup quarterback because he doesn't hurt you in many ways. Now, obviously he's going to have games where he plays like he did against the Panthers. There's a reason he's not a starter in the NFL, but he's going to give you more good than bad most of the time. The difference is it. And I'll say this, obviously there's a difference in physical ability between he and Kyler Murray.
Absolutely. You know, but what it comes down to is that Colt was about 10 years too early in the NFL. He comes out of his college career in 2018, 2019, 2020. He's going to be a star in the NFL.
Well, and the other thing is this, like, what people forget is that all of these guys that play in the NFL, even the Ryan Lindleys, have skill. The question is how long it takes another team to figure out that skill. And then the other thing is how often they can repeat that skill. Colt's issue is obviously that he can't, he has more down games than you would like in a starter. So, you know, when you look at Kyler versus him, that's what you see, right? That you see that Kyler's has a bad game every 7 or 8 games, whereas Colt might have one every 3 games. But that's okay because you're talking about a backup where hopefully you don't need him more than 3 games in a season. So if you get one bad game out of 3 games, then that's great. If he could do better, he'd be a starter.
I think it was important as well. The Cardinals kind of knew, and maybe it was Kyler Murray, the type of player he is, the type of talent he is. With Colt McCoy, Colt came in already with Kyler's respect. Kyler is one of those. It's hard to earn his respect early on because he's not just going to give it to you right away because he knows he's the man, and we've seen guys like that. And so a Brett Hundley, a Chris Streveler, they're great teammates, but you know, Kyler in a situation where you've got those guys behind him is going to play, and they brought in a guy who was a legend. You know, Kyler grew up literally watching Colt McCoy in the state of Texas do amazing things. And I think what this does as well, in addition to what he does in the locker room as a mentor and everything, Colt McCoy was quick to say, I can still play. He's like, I can still play. He still believes in himself. But it's just important for the team as it is for Kyler to see, look at how Colt is playing when you're not. So he doesn't have to feel like he did last year. He played the last 5 or 6 games kind of banged up. When he sees a guy like Colt playing at the level he did, Kyler doesn't have to feel pressured to play and perform, even if he's far from 100%. And I think that's one of the more, I think it might be one of the more understated things is this. If the backup is Chris Streveler or Brett Hundley like a year ago, my guess is Kyler's out on that field like he in this last game and risking further injury. But when you get the play from Colt, he knows that they're in good hands and that they can win. And even though he wants to play, the smarter play for him is to rest and do that. And I think the team as well. You see, like, for example, Buda Baker, who gets hurt last week in practice, you know, he's questionable of the game. He plays. Part of that is Buda's expectation, and part of it is the team saying, hey, we need you to play through this. When Colt's playing at that level, you don't have to tell Kyler to play through it. You say, we're going to get you right, and Colt's going to keep us right where we're at.
Yeah, that's a big thing because it allows, like you said, Kyler to come back when he feels 100%. And I mean, you and I can kind of let the cat out of the bag at this point. It's already out there. But they lied the entire time. They said Kyler has an ankle sprain, and that was, they left it at that. And ankle sprains can be interpreted as 2 to 4 weeks, you know, 3 to 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks.
High ankle sprain, which now granted, apparently I missed this, but against the 49ers, or maybe it was against the Panthers, that it was reported that he had a high ankle sprain, and no one else mentioned that ever. That a high ankle sprain, you're never coming back in 3 weeks.
Right. And so that was the thing, is he had a high ankle sprain. It was a 6 week, it was a 4 to 6 week injury. They saw what they saw out of Colt against the 49ers made them go, this is a 6 week injury. And not because Kyler needed 6 weeks, but because they knew they could go 38 days between games and allow him to get as much, you know, to get as much treatment and then practice time without being hurried back as they needed. And then they could still, you know, have some gamesmanship with it.
Yeah. It gives some context. A high ankle sprain is what cost Jalen Thompson basically his entire season. He missed a ton of time, came back, re-aggravated it, and missed some more time. Jimmy Garoppolo last year tried to play through a high ankle sprain, was lost half the season as a result. And so he tried to play through it. So Kyler, who moves around, that's a big part of his game. Now being able to come back after the bye, and it almost feels like a sure thing now. I think he made good progress and probably could have played, but he didn't have to. And I know he wanted to play, but the team was saying, no, Colt's playing in the life, so we're gonna hold you out one more game. And that's frustrating as a fan, it's frustrating as a reporter, but hey, it's worked out really, really nice.
Yeah, and it has, and that's what you like. And so that's where, you know, that's where we're at now. Colt McCoy's a guy you can trust. He's a guy that the team trusts, that Kyler trusts, and it creates this entire it creates this ability to really just kind of focus on getting Kyler healthy and ready to go. And you know, 38 days in between games, that's 5 weeks plus time. And remember, he's been rehabbing and out there at practice, moving around and doing things. So I would guess if it was the playoffs, he would have played.
Yeah.
But it was the point where, like I said, he was obviously a no-go going into San Francisco. But after that, it was all about the fact that they didn't have to rush him back.
Absolutely. Coming next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, of us, our Cardinals talk on the web, let's talk about a couple of negatives. Matt Prater's misses and the complete absence of Zaven Collins. What does it mean? That's coming next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the star of Cardinals talk on the web. I think the most glaring negative from the game was the fact that Matt Prater missed three kicks, missed an extra point, missed a field goal, missed another field goal. How worried are you when you saw that?
I was worried until then. I remembered, and this was a comment I saw, I think, on my site, but it could have been on Twitter. I'm not 100% sure that that Prater just had a baby this week, or mm-hmm. his wife and he. So let's be honest. I mean, you and I've got five kids each. We've been the dad after the week of the birth of a child, and we know how exhausting that is. So there's that factor. There was one kick that was obvious that Andy Lee just didn't have time to get the laces out. So that's, you know, that's a big factor. And then you said you thought you noticed one of the snaps.
It was the extra point. The snap came to the side, so he had to go to his right to get it instead of it being right there to set it down. He had to pull it around. So that had to mess with the operation just a split second. That's the sort of thing. I mean, you've got a new long snapper. Brinkley had been, you know, he'd been there what, a week? He practiced once before Carolina, but they didn't really need him because they were bad against Carolina, and then they got a full weekend. The other kick, I don't know. So the first kick, so the extra point, the snap was bad. It wasn't awful, but it wasn't good. The second one was fine, and I think Prater overcorrected, which led it to the wide left. And then the third one is when the laces didn't get – Andy couldn't get it turned around in time. And so, yeah. And long snappers, and it's really hard because you don't know how important that battery was. And something I pointed out when they brought in long snappers, the guy that they initially signed, Kyle Nelson, was a long snapper when Andy Lee was the holder back in 2014 with the 49ers. So they'd worked together before. And so they lost that. So you go from Aaron Brewer, who they, you know, who's been the long snapper for a few years now, to Kyle Nelson, a guy that Andy's worked with, to now Bo Brinkley, who he's not worked with, has only been with the team for a week. And his last games in the pros, he long snapped for the Titans for about a decade, and he lost his consistency. It was like 2 weeks in a row he had bad snaps, and that's when he got cut.
Well, and you look at it, and I know people will disagree with me, but I'm not worried about Prater and the fact that in that one situation where they were backed up on the two or the three and he had a solid snap to Andy Lee that allowed Lee to get the punt off, that meant more to me in this game than, you know, those iffy snaps on field goals and extra points. Like, yeah, he's got to clean him up, but let's be honest, in that clutch situation, he had a perfect snap in a really important spot. Because remember, that was it where the game was still
close,
relatively close, yeah. And a bad snap and a safety, and then they get the ball back, could have just completely changed the momentum of the game.
Absolutely. And the other thing to look at would be the complete lack of snaps on defense for Zaven Collins. I wrote about it on Monday, and Vance Joseph was asked about it. So we saw that. Starting with the game against the 49ers, Zaven Collins was replaced in the lineup from Tanner Vallejo. So he gets the snaps there. We thought, because Zaven was coming off the shoulder injury, that maybe he just didn't have the reps for the game prep, especially against a complex offense like Kyle Shanahan's 49ers team with all the motion. But then against the Packers, Zaven doesn't play initially. Vallejo is the starter. Now Vallejo gets hurt, and Zaven comes and plays the rest of the game. And I actually asked Cliff about Vallejo in the lineup, and he said that he earned those snaps. Okay. This week, they've had a full week. Tanner Vallejo didn't practice, and now he's put on injured reserve throughout three games. And so you're like, oh, okay, so Zaven obviously played. He didn't play a single snap on defense. Not a single snap. In fact, their base defense, they changed it because their base package included Isaiah Simmons, Jordan Hicks, and Zaven Collins. And what they were doing is they were putting Isaiah out on the edge, basically as an outside linebacker, where he can play the run, where he can play coverage if they use the running back in coverage. And then you'd have Hicks and Zaven off the ball. And then when they replace Zaven, they would put on Tanner Vallejo initially, but now the Vallejo's out. Rather than just putting Collins back in, they completely changed it, put Simmons back at the inside position, to the Mo position next to Hicks, and they brought Marcus Golden in. So they'd rather have Simmons Golden on the field than Collins Simmons. And Vance Joseph said to reporters today, Tuesday, that, you know, he got, you know, Collins was injured for a couple of weeks, and so he's lost some progress. But let's not overstate the fact. The fact is, he's now behind, and they don't trust him enough to play on this what is potentially a championship defense. Now, am I worried about that? No, but it's just interesting how things have gone this season, from being week one starter to Jordan Hicks, you're not going to be able to compete for the starting job, to, okay, they found a package for him, and now they're just not playing him.
Yeah, and it's tough, man. I mean, we talked about it last week. His transition was going to be difficult. And then I think, you know, and you and I are just as guilty, and we did not, or we undersold how difficult the transition would be going from, you know, a Tulsa, a 3-3-5 and defense at Tulsa, to the NFL would be. And I think you and I got caught up in the hype. I mean, he's a fantastic prospect still, don't get me wrong. And I still expect him to be a good NFL player, but we fell into the fandom hype as opposed to putting on our analytic or our analyst glasses and looking at, you know, hey, like, this is a guy that played in an unorthodox defense at a, you know, smaller Division I school, and had one dominant season. Now, those aren't issues by any means, but they're realistic things, and we also got caught up in the fact that Steve Keim said, hey, he's the starter, and we expected, okay, like, hey, they're going to let him learn on the job. And I think you said something poignant about it off the air. If you want to share that, I mean, I don't want to take credit for it. I thought your statement was 100% accurate, though.
Go for it. Say what.
Oh, and you know, you just said, like, they're so good they can't afford his mistakes at this point.
Right. That's exactly that.
And I think that's a really poignant thing of people mistake physical ability for being good, when it's like, hey, did you see that play Zaven Collins made 7 yards down the field and blah blah blah, and everybody's gonna, you know, tweet it and send it out, and it'll be a great, you know, tackle 7 yards down the field. And then somebody that knows more than you and I is gonna go, well, if he knew his keys, he should have made that play 2 yards in the backfield. And that's what it is. They'd rather a guy make a read and make a tackle 2 to 3 yards as opposed to a guy that doesn't make the read and gives up 8 yards but makes a fantastic tackle eight yards down the field. You know, and those are just small things. And I don't know if you saw it on Twitter the other day. There was, and this was after the Panthers, you know, debacle, and so people were definitely in their feelings, which is, you know, it happens.
Collins did not have a good game that game.
Well, there was a play on at the goal line. I believe it was the one
where he got face masked, like he got stiff armed by Cam.
Yeah, I think it might have been, but they ran a jet motion, and on the jet, Chandler Jones crashed, and then, and somebody tweeted out, "What is Chandler Jones doing on this play?" And you know, quite frankly, that from the lay person's eyes, you're saying, "Yeah, what is Chandler Jones doing on this play?" And so I talked to a couple of my friends that are defense coordinators in high school and stuff like that, and they said that's an automatic reaction. It's called a shake defense, and what they do is the edge can or the end contain the contain guy crashes on the jet motion to take that out of the equation, and then you're playing 2-on-2 with the running back and quarterback with the linebacker and corner. The linebacker didn't make his read. I think it was Zaven. It might have been Jordan. And then Byron got caught inside. So literally the only person that did the job correctly was Chandler Jones. And the person's asking, what is Chandler Jones doing on this play? Like, he made a mistake, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, look, at the end of the day, there are a lot of smart football people out there, like a lot of them. And I'll tell you this, most of them would sit in a film room, a film session with the NFL, with college or NFL people, and their mind would be blown on the things that they thought they knew.
The complexity with which that those plays are run.
And so that's what I'm saying. Like, we see these things and we see Zaven play well, or what we think is well, or we read, you know, Pro Football Focus saying that he's the second or third best linebacker.
and that's the thing. That's the thing with the Pro Football Focus grades is that, well, one, the Cardinals were using him in very specific scenarios for him to succeed. And so just because he's having a respectable Pro Football Focus grade does not mean that he's ready for an expanded role. It means that when in that role, he was appearing to do well.
Correct. And so, you know, when you look at it, he just mentally may not be there yet. And I mean, realistically, we know now mentally he's not there yet. But overall, I think, you know, again, you can only complain about it if they're losing.
Yep. And, you know, that's exactly it. So he's just not there yet. We, you know, we saw is there's the one thing that's a little concerning to keep your mind at. You kind of keep it in the back of your mind. Last year, Isaiah Simmons saw his role increase as the season progressed. Zaven Collins is seeing his role decrease. That said, they're on a really good team. Championship aspirations, like legitimate championship aspirations. He's not the only young player that has seen his playing time disappear. Josh Jones, whom they raved about, he's been replaced. They're reaching the point in the season where it's not just they're not just competing for the playoffs, they're competing for the number one seed, and so they can't be as tolerant for mistakes when there is much less room for error for what their potential is. And so that's pretty much the case there, which really it actually is making me more impressed with the play of Marco Wilson, because he continues to play every snap and he's been far from perfect, but he has been smart this year. I think that is the most impressive thing, is that Marco Wilson mentally has done immensely well when it comes to coverage. We haven't seen, it doesn't feel like we've seen many busts on basically as a result of him. He's physically sometimes getting beat. He's sometimes given too much room. But the fact of the matter is, he's not making mistakes that are going to cause them to decide, hey, we need to put somebody else, a guy like Antonio Hamilton, in whom they were quite impressed with playing in the slot. And so Zaven will get his time. I'm not worried about him yet. It looks like he will be a very good player, but it's just something to think about right now. And coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's go to the last segment of the show. Normally we would be previewing opponent, but instead let's look at the remaining six games. Which games are most important? How do we see things playing out? And which games are kind of their must wins? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, and let's talk a look. The Cardinals have six games on their schedule. This is how it plays out. They've got the bye week. Then they're on the road in Chicago. They return home for Monday Night Football against the Los Angeles Rams. They're on the road against Detroit. They come home on Christmas evening to play the Indianapolis Colts. They head to Big D in Dallas to play the Dallas Cowboys in Week 17, and then return home to end the season at State Farm Stadium against the Seattle Seahawks. As we look at those six games remaining on the schedule, if you were to, what do you see as their most important games on the schedule? I'm going to name two, but I want to hear your two first, or which ones you think are biggest.
I think the two biggest are going to end up being Indy and Dallas, that back-to-back Sunday games. They get Indy at home, then they go to Dallas on the road. I know that Indy's playing a lot better, and then I think Dallas is still going to be in a position where they're fighting for, you know, competing for that top spot. And so those two games I think are going to mean the most, and I'll tell you why after you give me yours.
And I'm going to downplay Indy simply because it's an AFC game. Because the Rams are so close, I'm looking at the two big games on the schedule for me, the Rams game at home and the Cowboys game on the road, because those will have, I think they will have the largest implications for their seeding. Beat the Rams again, they probably lock up the division, because that means they will have the season sweep over the Rams. And assuming they take care of business on at least two other teams on their schedule, which are bad teams, that gives them 12 wins, and that gives the Rams another loss, who already are a game and a half behind. And so though that and Dallas, which obviously could be for playoff seeding as well. And I downplay the Colts game because it won't really have any, other than the win-loss, it won't have any tiebreak implications for the division or the conference, other than the win and loss. Although the Colts game, that's important for, you know, the run defense to see where they're at the end of the season, and then a potential, you know, potential Super Bowl matchup.
Yeah, and one of the things that when you kind of look at it, the reason I'm semi-downplaying the Rams game is because I think that they're going to come out and lose this week to the Green Bay Packers. So that'll drop them down a game, and that'll keep the Packers within a game. Now, if the Packers continue to play poorly offensively, even though the Rams are playing very poorly offensively too, then and the Rams win, I think that Rams game becomes the most important game, because basically what that game will do is give you a two-game lead over everybody for the one seed, and then a 2.5 game lead over the Rams for the division. And that's the big thing. And you know, so you might say, well, you know, you don't want to lose that game, but if the Rams beat the Packers, then beating the Rams becomes basically the most important thing. the Packers beat the Rams and you lose to the Rams, yeah, it hurts, and obviously you'll drop down to that two spot, but the Packers have three tough games left. Or maybe it was four. I got to go back and look. But the Rams being one of them, obviously. So they're going to lose a game too. I think that Indy-Dallas back-to-back is going to really define if they're going to be the one or the two seed. Obviously, if they lose to the Rams, the division is all of a sudden a question mark. But I really do think the Packers are going to beat the Rams this week, and it's going to extend the Cardinals, you know, NFC West lead to basically 2.5 games with 6 to go and a head-to-head. And then if they win that head-to-head, it's all but over at that point.
And I look at the schedule, the remaining games. I see that there are two absolutely must-wins, not because of the importance, but because they're bad teams. They have to beat the Bears. You can't lose to the Bears, and you can't lose to the Lions. Those are two more wins to get you to 11. Taking a look at how the Seahawks are going, I don't see things going well. So unless they get on a roll right now, I have a hard time thinking that week 18 will be, I don't know what to think about that game yet. But they should beat Seattle based on what we're seeing from them right now. That's a third win that gets them to 12 wins. And then they need to go 4-1 in their next five games. Now, obviously, if they've got four wins in the next five games, they got 13. Then they're going to have 13 wins. They're going to have 13 wins, which is absolutely fantastic. But you have to beat the Bears. You have to beat the Lions. There's simply no question about that. Those are absolutes you have to get, because if you mess up against them, then you kind of put everything up in the air again. A Rams win locks basically the division in. Beating the Cowboys basically locks up the conference, because you kind of taking care of anything. And then the Colts game, other than the fact that it's at home and they've had issues at home, you want to see them win that. But it's of all the games they have left, I think the two that they end up having the least amount of consequence to losing is Indy and Seattle. And simply Seattle, because I think things will be wrapped up by then, and I think Seattle is going to
There's a good chance that they'll have
that they've checked out. They might be checked out by then.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see. I mean, the other option is that week 17 or week 18, I guess this year matters, and then you get a drumming that got a similar drumming to what got Ken Whisenhunt fired, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that could definitely be a fun one.
Give them the 58-0 back at them. Yeah, and so, but yeah, I like that the Cardinals have winnable games, so they've got wins they can stack. I think right now you're looking at, they shouldn't go 3-3, because if they go 3-3 the rest of the way with Kyler Murray back, then they're not as good. They're simply not playing well. But four wins, I mean, we should be looking at a 13 or a 14-win team, which, wow, that's fun. A 13 or a 14-win team that's healthy going into the playoffs, and you have the potential of J.J. Watt coming back as well. Not going to count on it, but you have that potential of him rejoining the team when the playoffs come.
That would just be a huge morale boost, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. And especially if you could get that number one seed, lock up the first round bye, and then you get to play whoever in round two. Gosh, that's going to be some exciting stuff. I like the schedule the rest of the way. If I had to predict how things are going to go, I think they're going to come out and win the next three games. And I'll say on a conservative side, they're going to win three. They're going to lose to Indy, beat Dallas, and maybe in, because they've got it locked up and you've got a Colt McCoy game or maybe a Trace McSorley game by then, in week 18 in a game that doesn't really matter against the Seahawks. But I think conservatively 4-2, with 5-1 being reasonably optimistic, and honestly, they could roll the rest of the way, which would be stupid, and have a 15-2 season. That'd be absurd. How magical would that be?
Yeah, and I think that they finish up 4-2. I think they lose one game, and then I think that week 18, like you said, it just doesn't matter. I'm just guessing they lose that game because it doesn't matter. But they, you know, if it's Colt, I still wouldn't be shocked if they beat them.
it would be really good to see, especially Seattle. I don't know what to think about them. We've seen them rally, but this team looks that Seattle team looks.
They look like there's too much infighting for a rally.
And it when it looks like they finally hit their breaking point, honestly. They lose Chris Carson. They're just not good enough defensively. Offensively, they're going through some struggles. And, you know, it looks like the run is finally over. And maybe the team around Russ isn't good enough. Or honestly, because of the missed time and the off-season questions, maybe he doesn't quite have the same fight to him to rally his team back when there's a little bit of unhappiness towards the team still, and he might be already looking ahead to the off season when he's going to get himself traded to, you know, Denver.
Right. Yeah. Denver or Indy.
Yeah. Awesome. So anything else worth talking about before we wrap up the show? And then next week when we come back, we can look ahead, maybe talk about, it depends on what we're like. We'll have other things to talk about otherwise in addition to previewing the game against the Bears. Anything else for the good of the order, Seth, before we wrap things up?
No, just appreciate everybody listening and glad that the first half of the season has gone well. We're excited for the second half of the season and the last six games of the season, and to keep you entertained and informed.
Everyone stay safe this holiday weekend. If you're listening to it before or after the big turkey game, Turkey Day, Thanksgiving Day, make sure you guys stay safe, stay happy. We're grateful for you guys as listeners. We're grateful for the Cardinals as a team. We're grateful to have the NFL to talk about. And with that, we'll wrap up this edition. It's episode 334. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, Be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.